But as we get started here, I want to welcome to our program Mark Jacox, Policy Analyst and Legislative Assistant with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Just say a quick word, if you would, about the Electronic Frontier Foundation and what you guys do.
Well, the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, is a digital rights advocacy group based in San Francisco. And so we do a lot of impact litigation and activism around the First Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights online, as well as a lot of intellectual property and free speech cases.
Thanks for that. And as we get started here, we were going to talk about a more general topic about government surveillance and some change in laws that are being proposed. But there is a late-breaking story that I read about earlier today, and you did, I'm sure many of our listeners saw this, that the Department of Justice notified the Associated Press that the agency had secretly obtained 2 months' worth of phone records of reporters and editors at the AP, including cell phone and home phone records. I realize we don't know a lot about this. There's not a great deal of detail that's come out, but it is kind of alarming, to say the least, that the government is surveilling reporters' phones.
Certainly so. I mean, it's quite jarring, especially right now. What we do know, so we don't know a lot of details. What we do know, though, is that they subpoenaed the call records that were going out. And so the DOJ is able to do this under the law with just a very low-level subpoena. It's really the enormous breadth of the situation. They looked at over four stations, and they looked at over four stations where over 100 reporters use those stations. And so the amount of information and the really aggressive actions to pursue just all these calls coming in, or going out rather, from the terminals is quite stunning.
Anything that, what should people be alarmed about in this? And I guess the second part of that question would be, is there any oversight here? Is there any judicial or legislative oversight that can put this genie back in the bottle if it indeed is out surveilling reporters? Mm-hmm.
Well, the concern is certainly the low-level subpoena that they received. It's a very, really quick kind of judicial action that the DOJ is given a large amount of leeway to use and to pursue. And so the concern is really the amount, the number of subpoenas they probably received and the amount of information they got from simply knowing who was calling in and out of the offices. In regards to oversight, the DOJ does have a set of policies, and this case does show a clear violation of those policies. When a news organization is subpoenaed, or when the DOJ wants access to calls like this or phone numbers, there's a set of guidelines that the DOJ is supposed to follow, and it is supposed to start out with pursuing every other alternative, and then it's supposed to next involve negotiations with the actual news agency. And it looks like the DOJ, again, we don't know much, but what it does look like is that the DOJ bypassed those two oversight mechanisms that are in their own policies to pursue the calls going out of the terminals and the press and the press's offices. So that's really where the oversight is supposed to happen. The next steps right now are really gaining more information, right? We've seen a couple of congressmen and senators come out and call for oversight hearings, and just this Wednesday, actually, I believe around 10 or 11 Eastern, there's a hearing on the oversight of the Department of Justice. So we will certainly be seeing a flurry of questions from congressmen. The hearing is in the House, and we will certainly see a flurry of questions from the congressmen towards Attorney General Holder about the issue.
Mark, in a related issue, The Obama administration is reportedly pursuing a change in something called the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, CALEA, which was established in 1994. Apparently, the Obama administration wants to make it easier to surveil communications over the Internet. Can you describe what we know they're after at this point and your concerns at the Electronic Frontier Foundation?
Mm-hmm. So right now, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act was, as you said, it was a law passed in 1994, and it was intended to allow for the FBI and the government to access, once given court authority and court approval to wiretap an individual, it forced the companies to create backdoors that would allow the government to obtain the communications that they were able to obtain under court authority. And right now, the FBI has seen, we've been seeing a very strong push from the FBI because they're saying that they are unable to access the communications right now online. So they're very concerned with accessing private IMs, instant messaging, and conversations that way. And so it's right now that's what we know. We know that they want to expand CALEA to these communication service providers, but we don't really know in what way. So that's essentially what we do know on the issue. And the fight for CALEA has been a really long fight since 1994, solely because it was only originally intended to cover telecommunications companies, whereas now the government wants it to cover ever more increase in communication services. And the concerns with it are primarily, I mean, there are a whole bunch of concerns. The first concern really has to deal with the mandate backdoors. What the main point of the bill is to create a backdoor for software communications and for other kind of communications and social media. And these backdoors have notoriously been used by hackers. They've notoriously led to a lot of wasted hours on parts of the company. And so the main concern is that the backdoors are unneeded, make us less safer, and also are a drain on innovation.
Explain to our audience how these backdoors, these technical keys to unlock encrypted messages, how does that hamper innovation?
Well, what a very simple kind of analog is just the number of hours an engineer spends creating these backdoors. So the backdoors are almost an impossible task because the aim is to create an entryway, a secret entryway into the software only for the government. And time and time again, we've seen that whenever a security flaw or a back entrance just for the government is there, hackers have always been able to find it. Both white security researchers, white hat hackers they're called, and malicious hackers, black hat hackers. And so the problem is just the number of hours wasted by engineers to kind of figure out this highly special backdoor that only the government can access. It often fails.
We're speaking with Mark Jacox, policy analyst and legislative assistant with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and we're talking about a number of issues regarding government surveillance and some new initiatives coming up from the Obama administration. Mark, I was wondering, in terms of the alternatives, there may be a lot of people listening who think, hey, we're living in the age of terrorism and the government does need, at certain points, there are legitimate needs for surveillance of some people who may be, you know, really terrorist suspects and not just Americans going about their business. Is there a more effective way to conduct surveillance that would not jeopardize people's privacy rights?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because the other examples we've seen in the past is that a lot of these cases, if not most of the cases, in dealing, well, first off, I guess the first point really should be the number of times the government encounters an inability to access these communications. And the government releases reports, a number of reports every year or so to Congress going over if, in fact, they're unable to obtain messages or if, in fact, CALEA isn't being followed. And so kind of the first point in regards to that is that we've seen from these reports that the number of times that the government is stymied by inaccessibility to the communications is few, if not a lot. So there was the report that was released last year, and we point to one of the key examples we point to is the ability for encryption to stop the investigation and the inaccessibility around those messages. And from a report that was released that summarized 2010, the numbers from 2010, it was released in 2011, the number of times that the DOJ encountered encryption and was unable to access these messages was around 17. The report in the next sentence said, regardless, despite the encryption, we were still able to obtain the plain text of communications and we were still able to pursue the investigation. So the first point that CALEA, expanding CALEA, deals with is little. We don't think that at least as of now, the FBI really hasn't given a clearly defined set of examples where investigations have been stopped or they've been unable to pursue criminals because of the current quote-unquote narrowing of CALEA and how CALEA isn't applied to communication service providers.
Well, last question for you, Mark. What do you think people should keep in mind in terms of government surveillance and their rights? There's always this debate now since 9/11 and even before 9/11 that there has to be some sane balance between security and liberty. And do you think we'll get there? I mean, it seems like the country is still reacting to the events of 9/11, and a lot of what's in our Constitution and Bill of Rights has been severely eroded.
Well, I think it's a constant struggle, but that's why the struggle exists. You can't ever go from one side all the way to the other. There's a constant balance. And especially with the expansion of CLIA, the past investigations and kind of surveillance methods, we've seen a lot of the cases cracked by traditional methods, key logging an individual or trying to just simply follow and get onto the individual's computer and things like that. And so traditional investigatory methods have worked in CLIA investigations, so the expansion is unnecessary. And then in regards to the latter question, it's certainly a tussle. It will be a tussle, I think, for a long time, but that's part of what makes, the Constitution, especially the Fourth Amendment, a great result of this country. It's going to be a constant battle, but that's why advocates like EFF and ACLU exist, and that's why there's a constant kind of reorientation around what is acceptable in society and what is defined by privacy and the Fourth Amendment.
Well, Mark, thanks for being with us. Maybe just lastly, leave our listeners with the web address for the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the resources that can be found there.
Mm-hmm. And the website is EFF.org, and we list a number of our issues and go-to information around there. Our front pages have all of our recent blog posts on these issues and many more.
Well, thanks for spending time with us, and we'll look forward to checking in with you guys again. You do some very important work there, and we're appreciative of that. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Take care, Mark.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Mark Jacobs, policy analyst and legislative assistant with the Electronic Frontier Foundation.